7:44. You're here on 2SCR Breakfast with myself, Tess Connery. Happy Friday. We've made it to the end of the week. Hope the day's treating you well so far. Now, here's a question. Are you in private health insurance? Do you sometimes ask yourself if it's worth the expense? Or on the flip side of the coin, maybe you're not in private health insurance because you don't see the need or the point. The news media has, over recent weeks, had a lot of stories about people dropping out of private health insurance due to either the costs or seeing the benefits of belonging. And figures do back this up. They show that the number of people taking out private health insurance in Australia is falling. Recently, Mark Fitzgibbons, he's the CEO of NIB, entered the debate in the Australian Financial Review. He said that the sensible policy approach would be to make private health insurance compulsory for all Australians, with taxation devoted to subsidising the premiums for those who would otherwise be left behind. It's certainly a new idea to be thrown into the ring, and we are lucky enough now Mark Fitzgibbons joins us on the line now. Mark, thanks so much for chatting to us this morning.
Yeah, hi Tess. Thanks for having me.
So I can make the assumption, I guess, that if we were to make private health insurance compulsory, this would be meant for all employed Australians. But what then about people who are unemployed or working in the gig economy?
No, it'd be for all Australians. Can I make a quick point, Tess?
Yeah, of course.
Every Australian already has compulsory health insurance. It's called Medicare. It's just a government-run monopoly health insurance. So the idea that we're forced to have health insurance is hardly novel. It already exists. And what I'm raising is that if the ultimate goal for society is that everyone has cover, you know, universal health cover, nobody gets left out, if it's to make sure that everyone has equal access to, you know, surgery and treatment, if it's to make sure that the system is sustainable in the long run, in other words, we can afford to pay for it as a country, call that Medicare if you like. If it is, I'm all for Medicare. But my point is that the current system, the current approach to Medicare is not working particularly well. It leads to, you know, Australia has out-of-pockets double that of the OECD average. And that $50 out-of-pocket at the doctors hits, you know, pensioners Jack and Mary much harder than it hits me. It means that people without private health insurance don't have access to decent dental care. It means people without private health insurance wait typically 250 days for a knee replacement, whereas people with health insurance wait only 50 days. And it means we have a situation where if you're an Indigenous person, your prospects, your chances of ending up in hospital for some reason is three times that of for average Australians. So it's not as though the current system is working for us particularly well, and we're running out of taxpayers to pay for it. That's the other crucial issue.
So what would be the benefit then of going forward with implementing private health insurance for all Australians as opposed to tackling some of those issues with Medicare?
Well, because it frees up funds. So we would all have to have health insurance. Now, I don't care whether it's a public health insurance carrier like Medicare or a private health insurance carrier like NIB. I'm completely indifferent to that, although I do think the private sector will do a more efficient a job at that. But what it then means is what limited tax dollars we do have. Like when Gough Whitlam kicked off Medibank, as it was then in 74, there was more than 10 working taxpaying Australians for every one retired Australian. Today there's a bit over five. By 2050, depending upon who you believe, there's a bit over three. We actually run out of sufficient taxpayers to pay the healthcare bill for this ageing society we have. At some point, we need to say, well, look, everyone has to have cover, be it public or private. Nobody gets left behind. But if you have a high income, like I do, you pay your own way. That's, you know, just like I don't get the pension, I don't get free healthcare. So that we can save those tax dollars for those who don't have the means or the income to otherwise pay their way. So they get the greater subsidy to pay their premium. I get nothing. And there's also more money in the pool for government to invest in research and to invest in, you know, the population health of remote communities, wherever they may be. You know, in my world, could you imagine a remote Indigenous community who all had private health insurance? I'd love the idea. We're actually doing the same thing in New Zealand with Maori tribes.
And so I know that when this has been in the headlines over the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of comparisons to the American healthcare system and saying that this is then shooting for an Americanised system as opposed to potentially a Scandinavian or UK-style system. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a therapy. People, whenever people haven't got a good argument, they say, "Oh, you know, Mark or whoever's just trying to make for American system." It's nonsense. Look, a couple of things about the American system, and I know healthcare systems around the world very, very well. If you're hit by a bus or have cancer, being in America is a pretty good thing. Of course, the standard of care is second to none. The problem with America is that, A, it's very expensive, and B, too many people get left out. Now, before Obamacare, there's something like 50 million Americans who simply had no cover, public or private. Now, Obamacare took care of that to some extent, but there's still way too much incidence of people not having any cover. In the world I'm talking about, Tess, everyone has cover, whether you're Indigenous, whether you're rich, whether you're poor, wherever you live.
At the moment, as it stands, Australia, back in Australia, we are currently paying something, I think, in the order of about $9 billion a year. And we have seen a lot of stories coming through recently of people not actually saying that they see the benefits in private health insurance. Making it compulsory, it's probably not going to be super popular or even politically possible. Why raise the idea? Why move forward with this?
Yeah, well, we pay about $6 billion, and that's to people. Our members, not to NIB, our members and those members of other health insurers get that money, and that enables and helps them take out health insurance, which takes enormous pressure off the public system, which is already bursting at the seams. You know, the private hospital system today accounts for 40% of all hospitalizations and 60% of all surgeries, and we fund about 80% of that. So without that support, we wouldn't see the level of participation in private health insurance that we do, and we wouldn't see the pressure being relieved on the public system like we do. You know, it's easy to talk about that $6 billion. What about $125 billion we spend on, you know, public delivery, you know, Medicare and the public hospital system? You know, its rate of spending per capita is growing closer to 6% compared to, you know, the rate of growth in private health insurance of about 3%. Now, that all said, I accept that you know, people leaving health insurance, particularly younger people's, a problem. And it's an issue we have to address as an industry. You know, it's one thing to be able to say to people, look, have private health insurance and you get to choose your doctor and you don't have those long waiting periods and you get to see, you know, you get to go to the best hospitals and you get good dental cover. But clearly, you know, some people, younger people in particular, are saying, well, look, you know, I'm prepared to take the risk and prepared to rely on the public system. And certainly we as a business have some ideas about how we can change that up. For example, we see our future role as being as much about helping you understand, predict and hopefully prevent disease rather than just being there to, you know, help you pay for it and your treatment once you get sick. And that's a world that's being aided by, you know, the digital age, our ability to collect data, interpret data and make it real for people.
Well, Mark, we really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for chatting to us.
My pleasure. Have a good weekend.
You too.